as I've got older, here are a few things I've noticed about Christ followers. First of all, as Christ followers age and get more and more comfortable in our culture, they seem to be less and less inclined to step out in faith. Second thing I've noticed is that too many of my contemporaries, baby boomer Christians, have lost their passion for following Jesus. They once had a passion for following Jesus, but now as they've got into their late 50s and 60s, they have less of a passion for following him. I also noticed that too many Christ followers are not finishing well today. You know, hardly a week goes by on my Twitter feed where I don't see another Christian leader has bombed out. Too many Christ followers are not hitting the finish line well today. Let me ask you this morning, how do you want to live? How do you want to finish? Today we're going to look at one of the unsung heroes of the Bible. His name is Caleb, and his story is one of perseverance and faith and finishing well. We first meet Caleb when he's 40. The Israelites have been led by God out of Egypt and through the Red Sea and across the Sinai Desert right to the edge of the land that God had promised them. There Moses sent out 12 spies, one from each tribe, to scout out the promised land. They were right on the edge of it. Moses wanted to know what the land was like, so he sent out these 12 spies to scout out the promised land. One of those spies was Caleb. He was 40 years old at the time. After 40 days spying out the promised land, the spies came back with good news and bad news. Numbers chapter 13, starting in verse 27, says this. This was their report. That's the 12 spies reporting to Moses. We entered the land you sent us to explore, and it is indeed a bountiful country, a land flowing with milk and honey. Here is the kind of fruit it produces. But the people living there are powerful, and their towns are large and fortified. We saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. The Amalekites live in the Negev, and the Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country. The Canaanites live among the coast of the Mediterranean Sea and along the Jordan Valley. But Caleb tried to quiet the people as they stood before Moses. Let's go at once to take the land, he said. We can certainly conquer it. But the other men who had explored the land with him disagreed. We can't go up against them. They are stronger than we are. So they spread this bad report about the land among the Israelites. The land we traveled through and explored will devour anyone who goes to live there. All the people we saw were huge. We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. Next to them, we felt like grasshoppers. That's what they thought, too. The good news? The spies reported the land was flowing with milk and honey. It truly was an abundant place. In fact, it was so good, the spies brought back fruit for the people to sample. The promised land had lived up to its name. The bad news? The people living in the land were powerful. They lived in cities that were large and fortified. There were even giants in the land. The descendants of Anak were a bunch of tall, physically intimidating bad guys. And they made the spies feel like grasshoppers. Thus, 10 of the spies concluded there was no way the Israelites could take the land. If they invaded, they would be destroyed. Two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, disagreed. They saw what the others saw. They saw the powerful people. They saw the giants. They saw the fortified cities. But they also remembered God's promise to be with them and give them the victory. Unfortunately, the Israelites listened to the talk of fortified cities and giants, which caused fear and doubt and unbelief to grip them. The people who had seen God lead them out of Egypt, the people who had witnessed God parting the Red Sea, could not believe that God would give them the land he had promised them. So they ended up wandering around the desert for another 40 years. Fast forward 45 years, and Caleb steps back on the scene. Moses had died. Joshua had led a new generation across the Jordan River into the promised land. The conquest of the land had begun. After a time, the Lord instructed Joshua to disperse portions of the land to each of the tribes. Caleb is now 85 years old. And he spoke up and he said this in Joshua 14, verse 11. This is 85-year-old Caleb speaking. He says, "I'm as strong now as I was when Moses sent me on that journey. And I can still travel and fight as well as I could then. Give me the hill country that the Lord promised me." You will remember that as scouts, we found the descendants of Anak living there in great walled towns. "But if the Lord is with me, I will drive them out of the land, just as the Lord said." What an incredible declaration. Those are confident words. Those are fighting words. Caleb is 85 years old, and his eyes are set on the land of Hebron. "I want that hill country." Others must have thought that Caleb was going a little senile. Hebron was not a beautiful green pasture. It was one of the desert, most mountain areas of the promised land. And in those lands, in the land of Hebron, lived the Canaanites. The sons of Anak lived there. And as I've already mentioned, nobody wanted to take them on. No one except an 85-year-old guy who said, "I want that hill country." Why those hills? Why that land? Well, when Abraham died, the only land he owned was the sacred burial ground in Hebron. He purchased the land so he could bury his wife Sarah there. And over the years, it became the final resting place for many of Israel's founders, Abraham, Jacob, Isaac, and others. And as far as Caleb was concerned, that land belonged to God's people. And he intended to conquer it for them. And that's exactly what Caleb did. At 85, he marched up the hill and he took the land. God was with him. God empowered him. And he took the land for God's people. What an amazing story. Let me give you three lessons from Caleb for us. Here's the first one. Caleb believed God. Caleb believed God. Notice, Caleb never denied the report of the 10 other spies. He saw the same problems they saw. He saw the same walls. He saw the same giants. The difference was, Caleb believed God. Caleb didn't just believe in God. Caleb believed God. He didn't just believe there was a God. He didn't just believe in God. He believed God. He had an unwavering confidence in God. He'd seen God part the Red Sea. He'd seen the Lord go before Israel for 40 years in the desert. He'd seen food provided from heaven. He'd seen the Jordan River part. Caleb knew he served a big God, a God who could make the impossible possible. He knew he served a God who kept his promises. Thus, Caleb knew God would be faithful and would give the people the land he had promised. All 12 spies saw the same thing. 12 said, "No way, we can't." 2 said, "With God, we can." One perspective brought fear and doubt. The other, courage and action. Think of your life. Which perspective are you living by? Which perspective are you living by? Are you living by the perspective of the 10 spies? No, we can't. No, I can't. Or are you living by the perspective of the 2 spies? With God, I can. One perspective in your life will bring fear and doubt. One perspective in your life will bring courage and action. Which perspective are you living by? Do you believe God? Not do you believe in God, do you believe God? Caleb believed God at age 40. Caleb was still believing God at age 85. What about you? Do you believe God? At age 20, at age 40, at age 60, at age 85, are you believing God? Do you have an unwavering confidence in God and his promises? Caleb believed God. Do we? Here's the second lesson. Caleb wholeheartedly followed God. Caleb wholeheartedly followed God. 6 times in the book of Numbers and Joshua, we are told Caleb wholeheartedly followed the Lord. What does it mean to wholeheartedly follow the Lord? It means to live a life that is devoted to God. To live a life of faith and obedience. And Caleb lived that kind of life. He wholeheartedly followed the Lord at age 40, and he wholeheartedly followed the Lord at age 85. Don't you want that to be said of you? Don't you want that to be said of you? Don't you want to be said of you at age 20? I am whole. Man, that person is wholeheartedly following the Lord. And then at age 40, someone looks at you and says, that person is wholeheartedly following the Lord. And then at age 65, that someone says, look it, that person is still wholeheartedly following the Lord. And then at age 90, they're saying, look it, they're still wholeheartedly following the Lord. Don't you want that to be said of you? If you're in your senior years, let's say senior years are 60 plus. I'm there, so I can say that now, right? If you're 59, you're a senior. Get over it. Okay, so if you're in your senior years, rather than leaving a story of how you got more and more comfortable as you aged, or how you got grumpier and grumpier as you aged, or how you collected more and more seashells as you aged, why not follow the example of Caleb? Here's my challenge to those of us who are 60 plus. Let's show the next generations what living wholeheartedly for Jesus looks like. Let's show them what it means to take bold steps of faith. Let's show the next generation what hitting the finish line well looks like. Let's leave some crazy faith stories that will be told for generations to come. Imagine young adults looking at us and saying, look at those crazy things those old people are doing for God or doing with God. They're still believing God in their old age. They're still taking the hill country for God in their old age. There's Ken Scalia in his late 70s going to Vicente Guerrero to build houses. There's Irma Fennell, who some of you know, most of you don't, just a short little lady who in her 80s, when I first saw her, was dancing in a church in Mexico. And I don't mean swaying, I mean dancing. And she's a little fireball, or she was. She founded the Irma Fennell Foundation, and Vicente Guerrero gave her life to ministering to the people there. Had one of the sweetest deaths I know of. Easter Sunday, everybody was getting together. All the missionaries in the area were getting together at the top of a little hill to worship Jesus on Resurrection Sunday. And they said to Irma, we'll drive you to the top. Irma said, I'm going to walk to the top. And halfway up, she fell over dead. Isn't that amazing? On Easter Sunday, she just kept walking up that hill to meet Jesus. She gave her life in her 80s, still serving, serving to her death. Hit the finish line well. There's my friend Ralph, who I've told you about in YWAM in Kona. Last time I saw Ralph was a couple of years ago. He's in his 90s, and he's still pouring into young adults. Says, why would I ever stop? What about us? Wouldn't it be awesome to have the younger generations looking at us and saying, look at those old people. Look at the things they're doing for Jesus. I'm currently 62, and I want my 60s to be my decade of greatest impact yet. And that's why in my life there's some things I really want to engage in and some things I definitely don't want to engage in. But I want my 60s to be my greatest impact. And I'm hoping when I get to 70, I say I want my 70s to be my greatest impact yet. I don't know about you, but I want my grandkids saying, look it, there's Papa. And he's 70 and he's still taking hills. He's 80 and he's still taking hills. They say that seniors can't change. Let's show them. And let's take some hills and finish strong. And then thirdly, Caleb blessed future generations. Amazing verse. It really hadn't caught me before till this week, but Joshua 14:14 says this, Hebron still belongs to the descendants of Caleb. Why? Why? Because he wholeheartedly followed the Lord, the God of Israel. Caleb believed God, and his believing God and living wholeheartedly for him not only blessed the people in his generation, it blessed generations to come. Don't you want that? Don't you want generations to come to be blessed by the way that you are living now? I want to conclude today with a metaphor I used 5 years ago. So I've told the story. You say, I think I heard this before. Yeah, you did 5 years ago. Congratulations for remembering. But it's called A Tale of Three Chairs. Chair one, chair two, and chair three. And here's the thing. Each of these three chairs represent a different type of person and faith level. And I guarantee you, you're going to find yourself sitting in one of these three chairs. The person who sits in chair one right here, they know the Lord. They have a relationship with him. They walk humbly with him. They've surrendered to God and his ways. Jesus is their king. Now, people in chair one are not perfect, but they're seeking to follow and obey the Lord. That's chair one. Chair two, these people, they know about God. In fact, some of them have a lot of knowledge about God. They attend church. But for them, Christianity is more about religion than relationship. They respect the Bible. And in certain contexts, they act Christian, like when they come to church. You all acted very Christian coming into church today. But God, while there, has taken second, third, fourth, fifth place in their lives. Self is king. And their prime focus is on acquiring things or acquiring money or other relationships or collecting seashells. And the truth is, North American churches are filled with people sitting in the second chair. They look good, but they're lukewarm to God. There's no fire in their faith. Now, here's the thing. On the surface, it's hard to tell the difference between someone sitting in the second chair and someone sitting in the first chair. Because second chair people say the right things, they sing the right songs, they pray the right prayers, they put their children in Christian schools, but there's nothing real on the inside. And I can tell you, the most unhappy, frustrated, joyless, cranky people I encounter are not non-Christians. They're not atheists. They're second chair people who live compartmentalized, pretend lives. And then you have people who sit in the third chair. People in the third chair, they don't know Jesus. They're far from God. They're not interested in the works of God. They might own a Bible, but it's collecting dust. Self, again, is king. And this is a really sad part. The third chair, unfortunately, is filled with the children of people sitting in the second chair. It's filled with children who sense God wasn't very important or real to their parents. And so these kids have turned away from God because they saw Christianity in name only. They knew it wasn't real to their parents. Chair one, chair two, chair three. Let me say this. The chair you sit in determines the legacy you leave. The chair you sit in determines the legacy you leave. And if you desire a legacy of first chair faith, you have to sit in the first chair yourself. You can't sit in the second chair and expect to leave a legacy of first chair faith. It doesn't work that way. You can't look the part and dress the part and act the part but not live the part and expect to leave a legacy of first chair faith. The chair you choose to sit in right now, no matter what your age, will impact generations to come. What chair are you sitting in? I don't know about you, but my dream is one day I'll be standing before God with my wife and my children and my grandchildren, and we'll be looking at each other and we'll saying, it was worth it. This is amazing. Isn't this incredible? But in order for that to happen, I've got to sit in the first chair. And if that's your dream, you've got to sit in the first chair. What chair are you sitting in? How do you feel about the chair you're sitting in? Are you satisfied with your choice? Would you like to spend the rest of your life in that chair? If you're sitting in the second or third chair, is it time to make a change? Hebron still belongs to the descendants of Caleb because he wholeheartedly followed the Lord. Let's be like Caleb. Let me pray for us. Father, thanks for Caleb. Thanks for these heroes in the Bible. But thanks today especially for Caleb. God, I pray that we will have an unwavering faith in you, that we will be like Caleb, not only believe in you, but believe you. God, I pray for the seniors here, that we won't be people who just get more and more comfortable, and because of that, take less and less steps of faith. Let's be a bunch of crazy old people who step out with you and watch you work, and in doing so, inspire the next generations. And I pray, God, for all of us that we would be first chair people, because it not only matters for our lives and for today, it matters for generations to come. Let us sit in that first chair, whether we're 15 or 40 or 100. In Jesus' name, amen.